Thank you, Jonga Kandemiri. Good evening, Zimbabwe. You are listening to Studio 7 from the Voice of America on Monday, October 9th, 2015. Thank you for joining us live from Washington. This is Chris Gande. Here are our top stories this evening. Former Finance Minister and People's Democratic Party President Ndai Biti proposes a transitional authority to save Zimbabwe, which he says could slide into chaos anytime.
Even if the worst-case scenario, that is to say the chaos scenario, does not manifest itself, a post-Mugabe government that continues to fudge on and permit the country to sink deeper into economic turmoil characterized by unemployment, hopelessness, and fatalism is not an option.
The wife of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara makes a passionate appeal to his captors to release the Occupy Africa Unity Square leader 7 months after his disappearance.
I know someone, somewhere out there knows where my husband is. Please find it in your heart to forgive Itai and release him. Please bring him back alive.
The new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director Dr. Beth Barr says after fighting the AIDS pandemic for over 30 years, it's possible to achieve an HIV-free generation.
I do believe it's possible to contain this epidemic, yes.
And in tonight's bulletin, we'll give you the latest in the case of the missing Zimbabwean girl in South Africa. Stay tuned. A former finance minister and People's Democratic Party president Ndai Biti says Zimbabwe's political and economic situation has reached a tipping point and the country could slide into chaos any time. Biti says only a transitional authority can save Zimbabwe from worse situations like a coup, which he says is possible as infighting in the ruling ZANU-PF gets to unprecedented levels. Ivan Chifera has more details from Harare.
Speaking during the Southern African Political Economy Policy Dialogue series on the post-Mugabe era, Biti said many factors, including the crisis of leadership in and outside government, the unfinished succession battles in the ruling ZANU-PF, and economic depression, all point to a possible chaotic situation developing in the country. The situation, he said, could get worse if the securocrats, whom he said seem to be angling to join the political fray, decided to take matters into their own hands.
If they decide to play an active role, the possibility of a coup in Zimbabwe is actually there. So in other words, the chaos scenario represents the various possible outcomes which are unconstitutional, which will resolve the issue of power and the succession in Zimbabwe.
He said, while other possibilities such as a coalition between the ruling party and sections of the opposition or a takeover by opposition, the most likely scenario at the moment, according to Biti, chaos is very likely if President Mugabe were to leave office now.
Zimbabwe right now represents Rwanda, possibly in 1994 February, where the language of delegitimation, the idioms of delegitimation were the orders of the day. You are gamma dogs, you are this, you are that, you are a sellout and so forth. It's a dominant discourse. And you add that to a center that is not holding. You add that to an economy that is not delivering. You add that to an economy that is dominated 6% by youths that are unemployment. So we are very close to a Rwanda situation than many people might understand.
The situation, he said, was exacerbated by infighting, which has turned sour in the ruling ZANU-PF.
The emergence of Mnangagwa is meeting a response which can only be described as tribal. I've heard very educated people saying, no, this country can't be run by Karanga. Ethnicity, whether we like it or not, is back on the center stage of Zimbabwean politics.
But, says Biti, all hope is not lost. He says the only way out for the country is the establishment of a national transitional authority. He says the authority would help restore peace and trust among citizens and create conditions for free and fair elections.
In our view, therefore, the NTA creates a win-win situation for ordinary Zimbabweans where stability and peace are married to the imperatives of social reconstruction, economic recovery and development. Even if the worst-case scenario, that is to say the chaos scenario, does not manifest itself, a post-Mugabe government that continues to fudge on and permit the country to sink deeper into economic turmoil characterized by unemployment, hopelessness and fatalism is not an option.
This authority, he says, should be inclusive, comprising political parties, civil society, churches, academia and labor. Crisis in Zimbabwe Coalition Director Pilani Zamchia also spoke at the dialogue session, which was titled Beyond Mugabe, Unpacking Dynamics of a Transitional Authority. He said while BT correctly painted the Zimbabwean situation, it was not clear how the transitional authority would be born given the sharp differences among the country's politicians. He also disagreed with BT on the possibility of a military takeover in the country.
I don't see the situation as it is now kind of ripe for an overt coup. But there's always been a covert military coup in this country, and that can happen. If the soldiers want to come in, I think they will put in their civilian clothes first, people like General Chiwenga, and then come through the ZANU-PF party.
Professor Savelo Gacheni Ndlovu of the University of South Africa said the positive thing about its assessment of the Zimbabwean situation is that there are some politicians like him who are working to redress the situation.
It's important that already we are seeing people who are actually imagining that let's avoid the crisis, let's think about the future.
The president has been in power for 35 years and there's no clear political or legal succession plan in place to allow for a smooth transition, even if he decides to leave office or he becomes incapacitated. Reporting for Studio 7 from Harare, this is Ivan Chifera.
Thanks, Ivan. Meanwhile, a video shot yesterday in Chimanimani where First Lady Grace Mugabe addressed a rally shows that the fissures in the party are growing as factions differ on whether Mrs. Mugabe should become the country's next president or vice president. Those filmed were attacking Vice President Emmerson Mnangagwa and those alleged to be in his camp. We were unable to reach Mr. Mnangagwa, who in the past has told Studio 7 that he does not lead a faction in ZANU-PF. The wife of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara has made a passionate appeal to his captors to release the Occupy Africa Unity Square leader, whose organization has been pressing for the resignation of President Robert Mugabe, claiming that he has failed to run the country. Shefra Dzamara's appeal comes exactly 7 months after her husband was abducted in Harare's Glenview high-density suburb. She speaks to Studio 7 about her husband and what she's currently facing.
We really miss him as a family. We are getting donations from different organizations for us to survive. My children are asking a lot of questions about their father every day. They ask about their father and it really pains me to see that my children are missing their dad that much. It's not 7 months. They don't know where their dad is. They really miss him. I don't know what happened to him. Or I don't know what is happening to him. It's now a long time. We don't know his dad. We don't know what's really happening to him. I still have hope that my husband is still alive. I believe that Itai is there somewhere and someone knows where he is. We just put our trust in God that he will be released alive. I want to make an appeal to the abductors. I know someone somewhere out there knows where my husband is. Please find it in your heart to forgive Itai and release him. Please bring him back alive. Itai Dzamara is a family man. These kids still need their father enough. Please release him, I beg in the name of Jesus Christ.
That was Shefra Dzamara, wife of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara of Occupy Africa Unity Square. For more details on her story, visit www.voazimbabwe.com. We are also on Facebook and Twitter. And a member of his organization, Charles Nyoni, says they are dragging government to court to force it to find Dzamara.
It's quite a saddening thing that we have clocked 7 months after the abduction of our dear comrade and colleague, Itai Dzamara. And considering that the government is not doing anything at all, even the police force that was charged by the High Court, that they should give us updates, theoretical updates. They haven't done anything safe for once that they decided to go public about the updates. So through the prayers for human rights, we have now started to launch in another complaint in the High Court so that we can force the government and the police department that they should continue and carry forward the investigation.
Is there any response from the government, you know, in terms of that petition that you sent to the president?
President Robert Gabriel Mugabe has not given us any response to the petition that we gave him ever since.
Are you
saying that he's not willing to work or to give Zimbabweans their constitutional given rights?
Are you contacting the president's office to find out exactly what is going on there?
Yes, the last time that we did that, they just told us that they were going to get back to us, and that was like 3 months ago. And 3 months ago, they haven't done anything.
That was Charles Nyoni of Occupy Africa Unity Square speaking with Studio 7 Skip Dube from Harare. Presidential spokesman George Charamba was not available for comment as he was not answering calls on his mobile phone.
Next week is International Day of Rural Women, and Studio 7 wants to hear from you. Where in rural Zimbabwe do you live? Call us and let us help you share your story of life in rural Zimbabwe. Do you have WhatsApp? Send us your voice message so we can play it on radio, or text us your number so we can call you back. Our WhatsApp number is 001-202-465-0318. Studio 7, your choice for balanced news.
A Zimbabwean mom's anguish has ended in delight after she was reunited with her only child who went missing in South Africa 2 weeks ago. 10-year-old Nicole disappeared after she was sent to a store by her mother, Princess Ngwenya, in their Hillbrow neighborhood. She was found some 30 kilometers away in Soweto, where she was living with a female stranger. Studio 7's Dunga Milinkomo reached Mrs. Ngwenya, who says she's happy her daughter was found unharmed.
I would like to thank the Almighty God, because even myself, I don't understand how it happened. It's not the first time this thing happening in SA, and most of them, if their kids are missing, they don't normally get them back safe as I did. So it's not by being clever or by power, but I would just like to say I'm very grateful to the Almighty. What she's actually telling us is when she left the shop that I sent her to, she tried to check around mayonnaise to the other shops, but unfortunately she found herself at the train station. That's where she was found by a certain mother, and that mother asked her to come with her. They took a train to Soweto. A certain friend of that certain mother went there partying and stuff, and then my daughter asked her to write a certain letter to come tell us where she is so that we can go and collect her.
What condition was she in when you found her?
She was in a good state, just that we're not quite sure. What we did, we took her to the doctor. The doctor checked her. We actually took her to three different doctors. They all checked her, and they said, no, she's fine. She's never been hurt. And then I requested to take her to counseling. So we are now actually doing those classes at Childline here in Johannesburg. We started Wednesday last week. We were there yesterday, and another appointment is on the 21st of October. Everything seems to be quite going well for now.
That was a Zimbabwean mother, Princess Ngwenya, on the line with reporter Ntungameli Nkomo from South Africa. ZANU-PF Goromonzi North lawmaker Paddy Janda is refuting reports he has allowed people who had illegally occupied his Caledonia farm in his constituency to stay. Last month, Harare East Member of Parliament and ZANU-PF member Terence Mukupe told the more than 3,000 illegal occupants that Janda had given them a lifeline by allowing them to stay at the farm after their houses were razed to the ground following a High Court order. But Janda was also the Deputy Agriculture Minister responsible for livestock, spoke with Studio 7's Jonga Kandemiri.
I think it is just mischievous and unreasonable for anybody to suggest that. With the police, why would we go to court to get an order to effect? It's because we want people to be out of that place so that we are given the opportunity to plan according to the requirements of urban planning, where we are supposed to do the physical planning, submit our plans to the physical planning, we are approved, and then we can move in terms of farming to make sure that the facilities associated with the proper care of people, like what is the issue of sewage, the issue of water, the issue of roads, and other oil plant roads. We can't duplicate another Caledonia, another anarchy again. We can't do that. So how would I then, on the other hand, I've got a court order to evict people. On the other hand, then I say people must stay there. There's just people who are political hooligans who think they can win votes by doing that. In fact, that farm is not in the Harare province. It's in Goromonzi. It's in my constituency. So anybody who wants to insinuate that voters who are there are my voters and they are in Harare, that's being serious. The farm is in my constituency.
There are some who are saying that they are invading the farm because it is also owned by a white person. What's your comment on that?
Is that what the law of the country says? If you are invading the farm, the invaders will be the one who are the beneficiaries. So if you are invading to sell, is that what we call invasion? And is invasion a legal word to use? Are invading land? Are white people not accepted in this country? But that's not the truth anyway. The farm is owned by a country, which is compliant with the
indigenization efforts. That was Deputy Agriculture Minister Paddy Janda, who's also the Caledonia farm owner. He spoke to Studio 7 on the line from Harare. Now let's take a brief look at regional and international news. The 2015 Nobel Peace Prize has been awarded to the Tunisian National Dialogue Quartet for its decisive contribution to the building of a pluralistic democracy in Tunisia in the wake of the Jasmine Revolution of 2011. Officials in Britain say a nurse stricken with the deadly Ebola virus late last year has been re-hospitalized for an unusual late complication. And the UN envoy for Libya has announced the proposal of a new unity government for the divided nation in what could be a very key step toward ending 4 years of chaos and political turmoil. Some 30 or so years ago, a new virus that decimated populations, especially in Africa, appeared, and the world has been battling it ever since. Zimbabwe has been scoring gains in the fight against the virus now known as HIV. The new Centers for Disease Control and Prevention Director, Dr. Beth Barr, says achieving an HIV-free generation is possible.
Zimbabwe has gained much credit for halving its HIV prevalence rate from nearly 30% in early 2000 to the current 15%. Operations Director Raymond Yekeye of the National AIDS Council attributes the decline to the country's aggressive prevention strategies.
All indications are there. We have over 800,000 people currently accessing treatment. Our HIV prevalence has declined by more than half. 50%, and new infections have also continued to decline. And I think we have achieved almost half, reducing the new infections by about 50%.
The new country director at the U.S. Center for Disease Control, Dr. Beth Barr, says she's encouraged by Zimbabwe's persistent preventive messages and practices such as male circumcision and testing.
I think Zimbabwe is renowned for the efforts and the progress that they've made so far, specifically in the voluntary medical male circumcision program. So I think Zimbabwe's effort in prevention is definitely achieving some ends.
She says all these are key to meeting the 90-90-90 target set by UNAIDS to have 90% of people living with HIV knowing their status, have 90% of people with HIV on antiretroviral therapy, or ART, and enable those 90% on treatment to have a reduced viral load by the year 2020.
Well, Zimbabwe does an incredible amount of testing every year, which is very encouraging. And we do know that there's about 50% coverage of ART in people living with HIV at the moment. But in order to meet the 90-90-90 targets, all of the countries in the region are going to have to think of new strategies and new approaches.
But in a previous interview with Studio 7, NACC's Monitoring and Evaluations Director, Amon Mpofu, says Zimbabwe has surpassed 50% coverage.
Our coverage for those who are on antiretroviral therapy is above 80%, which is classified as universal access. So what it means, Zimbabwe has actually achieved universal access.
However, in a recent interview with New Zimbabwe, Health and Child Welfare Permanent Secretary Gerald Gwinji said while 800,000 people are on ART, an additional 500,000 people living with HIV urgently need treatment. Despite Zimbabwe's overall gains in reducing new HIV infections, NACC's Raymond Yekeye says trends among youth in general are on the rise.
We are seeing sort of stabilization of new infections, which is the cause of concern. We are also worried about the age groups, especially new cases in young people.
Dr. Barr says girls in particular are affected, but she says the case is not unique to Zimbabwe.
We do see slight increases in some groups, and it does urgently need to be addressed. For example, in young women, we sometimes see this trend across the region.
She highlighted a recent donation by the U.S.'s President's Emergency Plan for AIDS Relief, or PEPFAR.
At the UN General Assembly meeting last week, PEPFAR announced their investment of nearly $500 million globally to support an AIDS-free future for adolescent girls and young women. And I'm very glad that Zimbabwe is one of the countries which PEPFAR identified as needing additional support specifically for youth.
While the increases in HIV infections among youth are of concern, Dr. Barr says she's more convinced than ever that an AIDS-free generation, as envisioned at a World AIDS Day conference a few years ago, is possible.
It doesn't mean that there's not an incredible amount of work ahead of us, and there are resource gaps, both in terms of funding and human resources and infrastructure and in many other areas. But I do believe it's possible to contain this epidemic, yes.
As Zimbabwe strives to reduce HIV infection and bring an end to the AIDS pandemic, stigma and complacency remain vices that threaten to reverse all the gains. More in the next edition of this report. This is Ndimiake Mwakalyelye reporting for Studio 7 from Washington.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States welcomes Mozambique's recent announcement that it has completed clearance of all known fields of landmines in the country. Since 1993, when Mozambique emerged from decades of conflict as one of the world's most landmine-affected nations, the United States has been proud to partner with the people of Mozambique, investing more than $55 million toward improving the safety and security of local communities through the U.S. Conventional Weapons Destruction Program. Through that partnership, which includes the international donor community and humanitarian demining organizations, we have worked diligently to safely clear landmines and unexploded ordnance, prevent injuries through community outreach and education, and provide medical and social services to survivors of accidents involving these legacies of past conflicts. The United States is proud to be the world's leading provider of financial and technical assistance to help countries address this serious humanitarian challenge. Since 1993, we have invested approximately $2.5 billion in aid in more than 90 countries to decrease the threat posed by landmines and explosive remnants of war. Our efforts have dramatically reduced the world's annual landmine casualty rate and helped 16 countries declare themselves landmine-free. Humanitarian demining in places like Mozambique sets the stage for post-conflict recovery and development. It is another important way in which the United States promotes international peace and security.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And in sports news, Michael Cariati tells us why the Zimbabwe football family is not happy with the Premier Soccer League.
The anger emanates from this weekend's fixtures in which two of the leading teams, Chicken Inn and FC Platinum, are playing their games tomorrow, while third place Dynamos is in action Sunday. This, fans say, should not be so, as it gives Dynamos an advantage, and they will play their games knowing the results of their closest rivals. This, says football follower Greo Kupakuana, gives Dynamos an unfair advantage.
These games should have been played simultaneously on the same day, despite the venues, so that the determination is... Now it is going to give another competitor a very big advantage.
Capes United fan Mishek Susaga says at this time of the season, the leading team should play their games on the same day and at the same time.
All the teams that are playing, that had something to do with the title, they were supposed to play on the same day. I think for the fair reasons, so that there won't be any complaints from both sides.
Chicken Inn faces neighbor Zaumain, while FC Platinum are at home to our at Mandava Stadium. Dynamos, on their part, play Harare City. Chisaga thinks the Zaumain game will not be easy for the Gamecocks.
Haumain, they are a team that is very quite unpredictable. Of course, they've not been playing very well, and Chicken Inn should not sleep. If they sleep, then they definitely the one who lose this match.
Harare City have not been playing well in league matches, but have all of a sudden picked up form in the Chibuku Super Cup. In three matches in the tournament, the Harare City Fathers plundered in 12 goals in Dynamos. Should be wary of Harare City's newly found form. The defending champions will also be missing admin Stephen Alimenda, who is suspended, and coach Tondera Indiraya is a worried man. Wild scenes of celebration rocked Harare Sports Club this afternoon after Zimbabwe's Chevrons beat a battling Ireland by 2 wickets. The visitors batted first and set a total of 219 runs for Zimbabwe to chase after their allotted 50 overs. In response, Zimbabwe were superb as they plundered in 222 runs from 49 overs, leaving them with 2 wickets to spare. Zimbabwe are now in the driving seat ahead of the remaining 2 games of the series. Zimbabwe are desperate for victory over the Minos, having lost both their 2020 and ODI series to Pakistan. Reporting for Studio 7 in Harare, this is Michael Cariati.
Maganaga Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngezviratidzo
Una maganaga Jesu muno shamisa
Unaita minana ngezviratidzo
Zvino tokudana Jesu muno shamisa
That there is the song from Vatendi Vajehova bringing our show to an end. But before we go, a quick recap of today's top stories. former finance minister and People's Democratic Party president Ndaibiti proposes a transitional authority to save Zimbabwe. The wife of abducted political activist Itai Dzamara makes a passionate appeal to his captors to release the Occupy Africa Unity Square leader. That's it for tonight. I'm handing you over to Ntungamili Nkomo. This is Chris Gande. Good night, Zimbabwe.